Let's turn now for a look at the movement in medicine called person-centered care. Dr. Davina Porek is the Associate Dean for Research and Scholarship at the UB School of Nursing. Much of Dr. Porek's research revolves around person-centered care, and she joins us to define the term.
It's actually quite difficult to define person-centered care because in some ways it's a philosophy or an approach to care where the person who's the recipient of care or the focus of care is at the centre. Now, we've also used the term patient-centred care. Other people use family-centred care and relationship-centred care. And those all sort of fit together in some way. Person-centred care is a little different from patient-centred care in that we're talking about the person as a whole in their entire life, not just when they're having an encounter with a health professional. A lot of patient-centered care is focused on making a decision about what treatment or stopping treatment and that kind of thing. Patient-centered care also focuses on or relies on proxies. So if you're not in a position to speak for yourself because you're unconscious, sedated, or you have cognitive impairment, then we would go to the family member or some proxy. With person-centered care, even when there's a situation that someone has cognitive impairment or is very vulnerable and frail, etc., has difficulty hearing and speaking from a stroke, for example, we would persist and make sure that we are able to continue to communicate with them and maintain their personhood and the relationship with them so that we understand what their preferences, values, aspirations, goals are, rather than it being around a proxy who may or may not know, be able to make that, you know, real judgment. So also it's not just about these big decisions, it's about every day, how you want to live your life, what's important to you, what do you want to achieve, and it's very much about maintaining relationships, people being in relationship and with the environment, with the people around them, so that they're not an isolated object of care.
This seems like it's a kind of a new movement in some ways. How would you compare it to maybe a more traditional form of care that's different?
It's new in a sense that people have been talking about this in the literature related to the care of aging people, older adults, probably since around the middle 80s in actual fact. But in terms of it becoming very well known and public, part of public debate is really because in the last 10 to 15 years where the Institute of Medicine wrote in 2001 about the quality chasm and spoke about person-centered care. I think then it's been reiterated in later documents by them and other policies. And most recently, in the last 5 years, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid have actually mandated that facilities providing care for older adults or anybody who, and if those facilities are in receipt of funding from Medicare and Medicaid, then they need to be providing person-centered care. It still gets us to the point of, well, what is it and how do you know you've got it when it's there when it's happening? I think in terms of what's happened traditionally, the simplest way to explain that is that traditional healthcare is provided in a system-centred way. It's about the convenience of the health professional and what works with the system. It's about task orientation and somehow as a patient or as a person, interacting with the system is that you have to fit the system rather than the system being about you. So it does seem a little odd that we have a system which the person who's ill or needing help over a long time, becoming perhaps more dependent in the normal things that we would do as adults, dressing, feeding, bathing, those kind of things, and just achieving your goals, that somehow we have to fit into a system or you don't get help. And I think that that's becoming less and less an acceptable way for us going forward. So the person-centered care is a movement. It really is like a social movement, saying we really don't like the way we're treated when we go to hospital. We don't like being an object. We don't like having things done to us, whether or not we wish them. And somehow we've got to change that. So the fact that we've got policy documents which are now saying, you know, this is the right way to do it and we have to change. Now we have to incentivize people, particularly people see being person-centered as just somehow being nice to people. And it's really much more fundamental than that. There's a sort of a human rights issue. When people get very vulnerable and marginalized for whatever reason, then person-centeredness comes into play. For my own research, I focus particularly on the older adult with dementia, who's towards the end of life. And the stigma that's related to aging for a start, and then if you lose cognitive capacity, you become completely stigmatized, very isolated, a nothing person. You lose your personhood. And that, so we're really trying to work at how does someone remain an active and interacting member of this community and society despite all of those things.
So the way that I am kind of seeing what you're saying is when you see someone in, say, maybe in a hospital setting or just in any kind of caregiving setting with a person with dementia, sometimes the people in the room will speak over the person and maybe not speak to them directly. Is that kind of what you're meaning?
That's part of it, yes, that they just assume that they will do things. Then they need to be kept clean, fed, watered, and that's it, and there's nothing there. I mean, one of the classic things that people say about someone with dementia is they're just an empty shell. And that, interestingly enough, is almost a universal phrase. The World Alzheimer's Association put out a report in 2012 which was focused specifically on stigma, and that was one of the things that no matter which language they were using, this idea that the person's gone. So if you see somebody as only a person if they can speak out for themselves, if they have the ability to self-determination and can walk around and do whatever they want to do, if that's the only way you define a person, then you've just excluded a big proportion of our society. And if you then say, well, what makes you a person is how I interact with you instead of what you can do as a unique individual, then you've changed what a person is and you've put them back into a place where they can be included in society. And nobody likes to be left out.
It makes sense as far as making the person feel more comfortable, but when a person doesn't necessarily understand the directions that a physician is trying to give them or doesn't necessarily understand how to regulate their own medication, how do you have that conversation, still allow them to be an individual, but also make sure that they're getting the information that they need?
A lot of this is about approach. If we're focusing particularly on the older adult with dementia, and when I say that, it's not like they're all lumped in one pot and they're all the same, because there's degrees of process in the disease and all sorts of things. People can do a lot more than they're given credit for a start, but they need support, they need allies in the process. So, for example, medications management is probably the typical thing you think about in healthcare, but actually that's like such a small part of your day is doing that. So of course having people who can organise that for you and help you, but doing it in a way where you're still able to take your own medications and be supported in that and have help in being reminded and things like that, if that's the issue. Possibly when people get more dependent, things that happen to them is that someone will just come up from behind and whiz them off in their wheelchair and take them to the bathroom, and you've surprised them, you've shocked them, and if they've got not only the memory issues, they can't remember who this person is that's doing this, they're also have got slowed processing, so they can't quite work out, well, where are you taking me, why am I, what's happening? And then someone will say, well, look, we're going to the bathroom because it's lunchtime and you've got to do, we've got to get you to the dining room. So they're sort of outpaced as well. And so all of those things together would make you very fearful. So we put people in a very fearful position. And then we're surprised when they act out or behave badly or whatever, instead of actually realizing that it's distress. Someone will hit out because they're distressed, they don't know what's happening. And the only thing they can think to do to protect themselves is to hit, to push people away or bite them or whatever. And so the people with dementia get this reputation for bad behavior when it's actually we caused it because of the way we approach the person. And this happens in facilities, yeah. It also happens in people's homes. It's not just about healthcare done by paid caregivers. This is what happens, and is frustrating and taxing and very difficult for family members to manage over a long period of time. So that's why one of the reasons we call it person-centered instead of patient-centered, because it's not just about medications and dressings and disease management. This is about how the person's living their whole life. And health and your interaction with healthcare, you know, health is a big topic, like public health is a big topic. The part of being healthy and well-being, which relates to actually being in contact with a doctor or a nurse or a pharmacist or a dentist or a social worker, it's I believe about 25%. The rest of being healthy is about the rest of your life, and that's where most of it's going on. And I think that that's why we call it person-centered, because it isn't just about that patient encounter.
It sounds like a lot of this is training of healthcare providers, but I'm also wondering, when you mentioned these types of things can happen in a home, mm-hmm. when a person's getting care, part of this has to be support for caregivers.
Yeah, absolutely. And most of the care goes on in the home, and for many, many years. It's a long-term condition, and it is a terminal condition, whether it's Alzheimer's or vascular dementia or any of those that we're talking about, a long-term terminal condition. And so people are out there caring for their spouse or parent or sibling for many years. So they need education, training, support. They need to be congratulated and celebrated, because they are doing an amazing job. Different organizations around the globe and including locally here, Alzheimer's Association, the Dementia Action Alliance, the memory cafes, are all places where people can go and get some support and find out how to help look after their person with dementia. One of the things that we try to promote is this idea that we're not just caring for, that because there's a person there really is a person there, that they also want to be able to give back. And giving people with dementia the opportunity to give back, to show their care and concern for the caregiver, to be part of making the family meal and things like that, not just told to go and sit in a chair and we'll look after you. TLC is sometimes the worst thing you can do for someone with dementia. They need to be included and part of the family and things like that. So giving people the courage and the support and understanding about why that's important, because our natural instinct, if we're looking after someone, is say, oh, no, I'll do that for you. And that's like the worst thing you can possibly do, generally, for the person with dementia, because you're taking their skills away. So, yes, there's a lot of education needed, and that's why I think with the whole part of the Affordable Care Act is the National Alzheimer's Plan Act, and embedded in there are a lot of the goals are around helping people with the caregiving part. I think some of the things we've really got to work on are things like respite, because it is a long-term commitment, and no one else is going to care for this person and help them as the disease progresses. And what we don't want to happen is that caregivers get so sick and exhausted that they end up being in need of care as well. We wouldn't treat children with multiple and profound disabilities in this way. I don't know what it is about I do have an idea what it is, but it's something to do with ageism, that once people get to be old, they sort of get cast off, that, oh, well, they're old anyway, and it sort of doesn't matter. But it really does matter if we're a civil society. It really does matter how we treat everybody and how the caregivers themselves are supported, because we need them to be healthy people too.
We've been speaking with Davina Porok about the person-centered care movement in the treatment of elderly patients with dementia. You're listening to Connections Healthy Friday. I'm your host, Michelle Faust. Let's take a quick break. When we return, a conversation about a huge success in public health. This is WXXI.